candy.
Yeah.
How do you make gold soup?
I don't know.
You put 14 carrots in it. Hey, Candy.
Yeah.
How do you communicate with fish?
Burbling?
You drop them a line.
Oh.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Hello and welcome to another episode.
Where are we?
Another episode of the Agency Podcast. Eugene here in Toronto.
And Candy here, also in Toronto. And I'm just opening up a little bit of, you know, those liqueur bottles that come in thick foil paper and they're chocolate and they've got Canadian Club in them, or what else have we got? Jim Beam inside. So we're going to be doing that.
And
right,
we also
now
have vodka ones. Ooh. And we have Cointreau.
And we've got party hats on.
We have party hats on and Galliano.
Yep. I don't know how long they'll last, but here you can hear the sound of the party hat.
By the time we get through this podcast, we might be drunk on chocolate.
We might. And we've got a nice fresh cup of orange pico tea.
All right.
Tetley's.
Mm. Mm.
Good stuff.
Yes, indeed.
And lingering are the Stag and Tuffy P.
Oh, yes, they're around here somewhere.
And the dogs are around, and the cats are around, and it's been very busy. I was in traffic for about 2 hours today. How about you?
Well, yes, Stag and I went on a mission because we always, in our household, we always have some good quality kielbasa around the house at Christmas time. And I had bought vast quantities of it, and the problem is that Sheila and I ate all the kielbasa. So we went out to the Starskys today. Yep. Stag, your husband came with me.
Yep.
And we got there shortly after it opened.
Okay.
And we did the only reasonable thing to do. Ran through the store to the numbers for the kielbasa counter.
Right.
And we got number 46.
Okay.
And we looked up, now serving 83.
So you had to travel back in time. Is that what I'm
hearing? We had to wait until it got from 83 to 100. That's and right. Then up to 46.
Oh, that is a lot of waiting.
We had to wait about 45 minutes in order to get our kielbasa.
It's really good kielbasa,
it's
right?
It's very, very good. And I tell you, it's hard to social distance in that store. It's very, very difficult. Maybe at least everyone was wearing a mask.
I think I'm going to sit a little further away from you right now then. I just drank my Canadian Club chocolate. It's really good chocolate too. Liquor bottle. Love it.
So, David Cornwell has passed away.
Yes, and we've been talking about him.
In the late 80s. Mm-hmm. David Cornwell, mm-hmm. also known as John Le Carré.
Mm-hmm.
And since we heard about his passing, Candy and I have been watching the 1979 BBC miniseries starring Alec Guinness, Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy.
And is it ever good?
It sure is.
We wrapped it up the other night, and it's fantastic. I was spellbound. It's so good. It's very slow moving, but in a magical way.
Yes.
In a plodding kind of way that showed the tediousness of being a spy. It's not a great job.
No, it's not.
It's kind of a boring job.
Unlike James Bond, where it's all about, you know, a dashing hero and his babes.
Right.
And good alcohol and fancy cars and gadgets.
That's right.
It's about a bunch of frumpy old guys.
Yep.
Who are changing the history of the world through the Cold War by spying on each other.
That's what it seems like. Now, and spies are around all the time, but this is particularly Cold War spying.
Yes.
You're right. So the premise of the story begins with... now, this is a funny thing. They call the MI6 the circus. And I think the circus indicates a certain floor or office within that. It's pretty... It's one, like, department. I love it that they call it the circus. And they call their boss...
Control.
Yeah, he
doesn't
have
a name.
And what happens is Control picks up this guy, Jim Pardue. Am I saying that right?
Jim Prito.
And he says, there's a mole. We've had rumors of it for a long time. And I need you to find out who the mole is. Is that right?
And he sends him to Czechoslovakia because there's apparently a general who they can turn. And he's going to meet this general. And the general's going to tell them the name of the mole. And all Control wants is just one word. And so he assigns names from a nursery rhyme to the main bosses of the circus. So Percy Adeline is Tinker.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Hayden is Tailor. Roy Bland is Soldier. Toby Esterhazy is Poor Man. And George Smiley is Beggar Man. And one of them is the Mole.
Right. Yeah, they've narrowed that down somehow.
And Predo goes to Czechoslovakia, and everything turns to shit.
Yeah, there's like an ambush. He gets shot.
He's shot up in the back.
I thought he died.
He did not die.
You don't find out right away that he didn't die because it fades to like a fade out of some kind. And it's a few scenes into the next episode that you find out, oh my God, he's still alive.
He's alive. He's living in a little caravan and he's teaching in a private school.
That's right.
And then George Smiley, who has been basically fired for being too competent. It's sort of like corporate America or corporate Canada. Mm-hmm. People rising up to their level of incompetence. Well, Smiley was too competent, and he was sort of pushed out by the old boys. And he gets summoned by this character named Lacon, who's the representative of the minister.
Right.
And they ask him if he'll find out who the mole is.
Right.
Right. So Smiley's a frumpy guy. He looks like he's in his 60s, maybe.
Yeah. And we don't even know, was he really out of work or did they bring him back or is he a contract worker? We don't really know.
Well, we know that he was fired. And we don't know what he was doing.
Right. So somehow he's employed again.
And every time someone sees them, they ask about his wife and how is Anne?
Yeah.
And because they all know Anne, because it seems that Anne has slept with much of the circus.
Apparently she has. And so it's this dig against this guy. Now, one thing I really like about George Smiley's character is there is a frumpiness to him. He's got these big glasses like Mr. Magoo.
Like my father had glasses like that. It was beautiful.
Yeah, they were pretty good. And he was able to really act within the realms of those glasses. Like he would sometimes have big eyes.
His eye expressions were just priceless.
They were priceless and they were pretty funny at times, but he also reminded me of Columbo as being the unassuming, bumbling kind of sleuth. And yet his slow and steady work brought fruit. He worked very slowly. He listened to everything. So a lot of this film is just them, or the miniseries is reading papers, talking to people, going
looking
to a coffee.
Looking for files.
Yeah, having drinks in a bar. And often with people who are, once you listen to them, you realize that they're kind of sleazy.
Yes.
And they're co-workers and they're running the country.
And it's an old boys club.
It's an old boys club.
Right, the women, with a few exceptions. The one exception would be Anne.
Uh-huh, the wife, yeah.
The wife. And the other would be a character named Connie, who was the chief research officer until she too was fired.
Yeah.
And he goes to visit Connie at Oxford, where she's tutoring students.
Right, which is a lovely setting, too, if you think about Oxford.
It's beautiful. She's there with her dog.
Yeah.
And you think that she's this kind of doddering old lady.
Yeah, and you realize, you know, she would have been young one day. They both were young because they kind of seemed to suggest that they flirted at work.
Yes.
I'm convinced that they didn't have an affair even.
That's true. You never know.
You never know.
And she goes, oh, my George,
yes,
you know, my favorite George.
It's the way she did that was really made me think they had something going.
And then he says, well, this is kind of official. I'm here on business.
Right.
And he asks about this particular Russian guy in the embassy.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, she just unloads with all the tiny details of his personal past, everything.
Yeah, like a robot or a she did her dictatorship. And dictating? What do you call it when you, she had a memory. She flowed out of her. She started saying, born 1935, and she just said the whole thing like that. All at once, lived on this street when he was 15 and moved over here.
And we learned that she got fired because she wouldn't stop pressing about this particular guy when she said he's dyed-in-the-wool Moscow hood. And everyone said no, no, no.
Is it the same guy or is it Carla that she's talking about?
No, she's talking about the guy who was with Merlin.
Merlin,
who is a spy source that they develop.
Right. We never see Merlin.
No, and no. Merlin is, it's a project called Witchcraft, and it's providing all this wonderful spy material for the Brits, except that it's all being fed by the Russians,
who
gave them good material at first,
uh-huh.
then gave them just tidbits, and in exchange, they're getting all kinds of good material.
That's right. So the other thing is just the aesthetics of this. We're in a lot of run-down restaurants. The restaurants aren't posh. I think they used to be posh. Everything seems a little shoddy, like it needs new wallpaper. The suits are, you just feel like you can almost smell like an old dusty suit on the people. And I think it indicates and a very fallen empire. The empire is long gone.
Yes, that's how it seems.
Yes.
And everything would continue to go along as it had been going along, except that a scalp hunter, a spy named Ricky Tarr, was in Portugal, where he met and possibly fell in love with a Russian agent who wanted to defect and said, "I have information. I can tell you about the mole."
Right.
And then, of course, she gets snatched by the Russians and tortured, eventually killed. So he then goes to Lacan and says, "You have a real problem here in your organization. This is what I know." And that's why Lacan brings in Smiley.
Right. So they hear his whole story. And what's interesting is that even though he's telling this kind of love story and he really liked this woman, there's tons of information that is very important. It often looks like, okay, tell me about when you worked with Eugene Napik. And then the story will give Smiley information that even the person who thinks they're holding something back from Smiley, he gets things from it. That's the other thing, is that some people are going to be secretive, and he still has to eke out that information in it. So there's a feeling of it being end of empire. And then the other thing that I took away was that they're still fumbling with all this war stuff and power struggle, and they are kind of the aristocrats of society. They're the ones that are really running the country in some ways, or they certainly feel that they are that privileged. They get to get away with a lot of lifestyle things that other people wouldn't be able to do. There are definitely some homoerotic moments in it. And it's, you know, that in spies, they recruit people who may have blackmail potential. However, it also works to, because they're in the spy business, they get to get away with a lot more stuff. And so this weird part of aristocratic lifestyle is way at its end. And they, even though there's no war, there's a weird part about, like, what's that thing when it's like they're the ones who are dangerous. They're the ones who are dangerous to everybody. They're supposed to be solving all the problems, yes, but they're the ones creating all the problems.
By the way, I just opened a vodka chocolate.
They are so good. And I think we're the only people in the house that like these.
It could be. We may have to just go one by one through the...
they are so good.
Through all there's the alcohol.
There's a Drambuie. Oh. I don't know what this... Oh, that's the vodka. And then there's a little... And they're minuscule. They're like Barbie bottles here.
Oh, yeah. There's no alcohol in them at all.
No. It's really strong, right? Contreau. Drambuie. Very good. Yeah, I really loved it. I kept comparing it in my mind to the one that was made about 5 years ago with Colin Firth and Gary Oldman. I love also that excellent movie. Amazing movie. But I found the old one suspenseful in ways I didn't expect. And the new one is made really super sexy 70s.
Yes. Now, if you were expecting the kind of pace that you might see in a modern television production, like, say, Breaking Bad or something like that, it's not
or
like
Ozark.
That. It's got a kind of pace in which... There are climaxes, but they're slow burn climaxes, and you're built up to them. And there's really only two parts of, it's a seven episode series that was condensed to 6 episodes for North America.
Hmm.
And there are really two sections of it that have kind of spy shit action.
Yep.
And the one is when Jim Prieto is in Czechoslovakia.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is in the last episode when they trap the mole.
Oh, yeah, in a safe house.
In a safe house.
A safe house that's set up by these other couple of spies that are Russian, one the Russian hoodlum, a few spies that get the information from the Russian hoodlum, and also, then we see the code that they... I like the code was 2 milk bottles on the steps.
Yes.
You leave 2 milk bottles and
everything's okay.
And everything's okay. We're going to have a meeting tonight. And that was very suspenseful. And in that house were tons of retro recording equipment and filming equipment. It was and security system. It was really cool. And one of the security systems, I love the part where this guy, Peter... What's his last name?
Peter Gilliam
and George Smiley seemed to be at different places in their career, but they had a beautiful friendship. They just seemed to work together really well, like mentor and student, and yet they also learned from each other. It was a very good chemistry between those two. I loved it.
Yes, and Smiley's a great character, and Alec Guinness is so brilliant.
Alec Guinness is one of the greatest actors ever. Of course, we all know he was in Star Wars, but he was in The Bridge on River Kwai. He's in Dr. Zhivago. What else is he in? Gully Jimson. He's in The Horse's Mouth,
yes.
Right, which we need to get Stagg to read. He's never read it. And we were big fans of that.
Yes, if you're interested in reading a book of fiction about an artist and you haven't read The Horse's Mouth by Joyce Carey, it's a must read.
And I think also we've got to try and track down Our Man in Havana. That's a Graham Greene novel. It's about a spy.
And Graham Greene, like John le Carré, was a spy.
Yeah, who wrote
novels. And in fact, in the le Carré memoir,
The Pigeon Tunnel,
he talks about how they thought that Greene was going to be arrested because they thought that he had gone too far in his books and had broken the Official Secrets Act.
Right, right. So I really want to see that. I want to see Alec Guinness do that, and I might even want to read it. I've read a couple of Graham Greene books, and they are really good.
So knowing...
Yeah.
It's a funny coincidence. Knowing we were going to talk about this today, this morning we were reading the paper, and Sheila said, hey, there's this really interesting article here about John le Carré. And the article is written by Nancy Olivieri. Mm-hmm. And Nancy Olivieri is a physician and professor of pediatrics, medicine, and public health sciences at the University of Toronto. Her ongoing story is updated regularly at inthepatientsinterest.org and on Twitter at Dr. Nancy Olivieri. That's Olivieri. And she writes in this article, which is headlined, David Cornwell Listened and John le Carré Changed My Life.
And David Cornwell is his birth name.
That's right. So she talks about how the story begins in 1996. She's a physician and researcher at the Hospital for Sick Children, and she raised concerns about the safety of a drug in clinical trial. And she writes, my unfavorable findings displeased Barry Sherman, CEO of a drug company that had supplied modest funding to my clinical trials. And I'm just going to digress here and mention that Barry Sherman and his wife, Honey Sherman, were brutally murdered in their home about 2 years ago.
Yes. Unsolved.
Unsolved. Yes. What followed, I'm back quoting again, was the unilateral, abrupt, and premature shutdown of my trials, followed by threats that all legal remedies would be sought against me if I published my concerns or disclosed them to patients. So she was contacted by David Cornwell, who was researching a book which turned out to be The Constant Gardener.
Which we talked about a couple weeks ago when I said in the book I was really fascinated. I had not watched that movie because I didn't think I would be into it, and I didn't know it was a John le Carré film.
Yes, and he dramatized the exploitation of vulnerable patients in research sponsored by pharma. So he went and interviewed her over several days to get all the gory details about the interference in the research by the pharma companies. Fascinating story. It's in the Toronto Star today. You can access it online, but you may have to subscribe. I think there's a paywall on the Star.
Okay.
But I highly recommend the article. It's really excellent.
It really
and
is.
It's super timely as well.
So timely. And I guess that's why she talked about it, because she had that backstory and he just passed away. So I thought that was pretty cool. And then, of course, we're worried about... drug companies right now, we're hoping that our lives are in their hands because they've got potential vaccines for us. And definitely they're pushing out the vaccines. It's pretty exciting. And we don't want them to be corrupt and trying to be money makers.
Exactly.
We want them to do it for humanitarian purposes. No one begrudges anyone making some money. But we want to, we don't want to hear about a story like this where they're being so corrupt. So I'm very curious whether this... murder with Sherman has anything to do with it? Is it a family that died from drug testing, or is it just bad business deals over the years?
Or is it someone in the family, or just some random stranger? Who knows what happened? Apparently the police know something. They have a person of interest. If you want to follow that, also I think in the Toronto Star, the writer is Kevin Donovan, who is one of the writers who dogged the Rob Ford story when Rob Ford was our mayor, and there was a tape floating around of him smoking crack cocaine.
Good stuff. Okay, yeah, this is all very interesting. It's weird that they haven't been able to catch who murdered them in 2 years. That's you know, I guess sometimes people do get away with murder. What else? Oh, you know, the other thing is that I thought about, I want to go back to, we do see George Smiley's wife, and we find out at some point.
She's an aristocrat.
She's an aristocrat. She's extremely wealthy. She looks like she lives at Downton Abbey. And
yeah, really.
Yeah. And I couldn't help but think, everyone teased him and dig at him for being a cuckolded man, and yet he got benefits from her sleeping with all these, if she did sleep with all
of them. Yes, and maybe she was an asset.
Maybe she was actually an asset. He may have loved her. There's also a potential that maybe they didn't have such a sexual relationship.
That's right. I mean, he seems perfectly reasonably happy with the fact that she lives in her giant castle-y thing.
Right.
He lives in a little house or a little apartment.
Right.
And they don't live together and they don't see each other very often.
That's right. Because there's a lot of strange hints at identity and sexuality in this. As I said, there was homoerotic aspects to it because some of these spies slept together. There's a hint that he might have been involved with Connie, but there's also a hint that he's shocked that she's even talking about it. And then when you see Anne, I did have the weird feeling that maybe he's gay. Or bi or something.
Well,
or
no, you just don't
know. Because they don't bring it up.
And then when the mole is captured, asks Smiley, well, can you look after the girlfriend? He's married.
Yep.
He says, but can you look after the girlfriend? And yes, I will. Whatever,
yep,
they're going to
yep.
make sure
Take,
she gets
make
something.
She gets rent or she gets taken care of financially.
Yeah. And then he says, and there's also the boy.
Yeah. So you've got this kind of Marquis de Sade kind of attitude happening with these spy aristocrats that get to do whatever they want. They can travel anywhere in the world. Even if it's a war zone, they can go there. They're protected by embassies. They're living amongst all kinds of countries, and they have freedoms. And you could never look like them anymore because you would think that person is a spy if you looked like them. What spies look like now are such a wide range. You're going to have nerds that are computer hackers. Probably some of them are hired by corporations. Did you ever see, did we talk about Duplicity? Starring Julia Roberts and Clive Owen?
No.
Yeah, we should talk about that, or you should maybe see it. I'm going to say you're going to give it a 6 or 7 out of 10. I don't know if it's a super, super well-made movie, but it's got a lot of interesting things in it, and it's a very good portrayal of what spies are now.
Okay.
And maybe they don't look like Julia Roberts, but I think the work that those two do is what spying is for the most part right now. And I think if you're going to be a spy checking out other countries, you're going to have to be something like an artist. Or if you were a spy in China, how would you fit in?
And of course, I just like to have a little disclaimer.
Yes.
There are no spies at the agency.
There are no spies at the agency, and if we were, we couldn't tell you.
That's right.
That's right.
And we wouldn't have ID badges.
And Eugene and I don't have any secrets.
Exactly.
Right. We can't argue with
because
each other.
Neither of us can keep our mouths shut.
No, we can't keep our mouths shut. And also, if we disagree, we can't have a secret about it. We gotta bring it out.
That's right.
Yeah, I wonder if I have any other notes here. Oh, Ian Richardson, who was very good in it. Everyone's acting was very good. He's played a spy twice before. Three times in his career he played a spy. He played Anthony Blunt in two different productions. And along with Anthony Hopkins, who played Guy Burgess. And those guys, I think you were the one who told me that Kim Philby might have been who this character, the mole, in Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy
was based on. Yeah.
And those guys were part of the, was it Camrose 5 or Cambridge 5, of moles and double agents with Russia.
Yeah.
You know, and at one point, the bad guy in this, he says something about the ideology that England doesn't have any ideology anymore and that it doesn't take care of its people. Now, that does fall upon the fact that jobs are gone and it's a decaying culture at the time of the movie, because I think Britain is doing pretty well in a lot of ways because of tourism. And you look at pictures of London in any newscast, and it looks so rich and expensive. I don't know how anyone can live there. I know somebody who inherited a house from their parents in London, and I think she sold it for something like $20 million.
Oh, my
something
God.
Like. Yeah, no, it was insanity. She lives in the States now, but, you know, she's been living in the States for a long, long time. But everything in London is super expensive. Where was I going with that?
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either.
Well, I'd like to. Oh, also, before we leave this topic, there was a very interesting cameo in this series.
Oh.
And that was the character of Carla, who was like the chief Russian spy.
Who they're trying to find in a way.
Yeah, he's the guy who's kind of pulling all the strings from Russia. And there's a flashback to a time when it looked like Karla was going to get killed by his own people.
Right.
And so he was arrested on some trumped up charge, and Smiley went to interview him and basically offer him an out.
Right. And they made him look a lot younger. The makeup was really, really good. Smiley looked a lot more fit, and he looked younger. And then I would never have recognized this actor.
It's Patrick Stewart is Karla, and he has no lines, so you wouldn't know it from the voice because he doesn't say anything.
No.
He just sits there and stares.
Right.
And they've got lots of makeup on him
like
to change his appearance.
Like a waxy makeup. I think his brow has changed, his nose has changed, and his cheekbones. And I guess the lighting, like, they made his eyes very dark, and he just didn't look like him in a lot of ways. But as soon as you said it was him, I knew you were right. And there's a little bit of a power play between Smiley and Karla. So it's very...
Oh, yes. And, of course, there's a lighter. Because everybody smokes in this.
Right.
It's 1979. Sure. Everybody's smoking all the time.
And they're smoking all the time.
Even in, like, a meeting, the spies are lighting up their pipes and their cigars and their cigarettes, like, all the time.
And so Carla's going to have a cigarette. He brings him some American English cigarettes.
And Smiley gives him a lighter to light it with.
Right.
And it says, "To George, all my love, Anne." Of course. And Karla steals the lighter.
I know.
So
it also mirrors that this Anne has been stolen by men in his life. For better or for worse. So that's why I think she's like an asset.
That's a very, very interesting point. That could be.
Yeah, I don't know, but it's so weird because I think he notices it almost quickly. He could have got that back. So I don't know why he doesn't get it back.
So we've been revisiting some productions based on Le Carré's writing.
Oh, yeah.
The Spy Who Came In From the Cold with Richard Burton.
Right,
and this one.
Yep.
And we have on DVD here that we may or may not have a chance to see in the next few days is Smiley's People.
Right. I hope we do.
That would be, if we do see it, we'll talk about it on an upcoming episode.
Definitely.
So in some past episodes, Candy's breaking into another...
I'm going into a vodka.
Which one? A vodka.
So this is my third one now, so I'm going to be wasted. This is a vodka chocolate. Chocolate and vodka don't sound like they would go together.
Yeah,
but
they're not bad.
But
not,
okay, good to know. Good to know.
You know, in some recent episodes, we talked about all the chess movies.
Yes.
And in particular...
Queen's Gambit.
Queen's Gambit.
Which everybody's watching.
And Sheila, my wife, has managed to research up a documentary that's really fascinating. Mm. And she got us the DVD. I don't know if you can find this one. It's a hard one to find.
Okay.
I don't think it's on the streaming services
now.
Maybe the library might have it. It's from 2012. It's called Brooklyn Castle. And Brooklyn Castle is a documentary about a school in Brooklyn that is... has like 70% of the students are below the poverty line, and the school, the classes they're like the United Nations.
Mm-hmm.
There's people of every possible ethnicity all together in the school. And whereas in some schools, the school heroes are the football stars.
Right.
In this school, it's the chess players and they have a chess club, and the geeks are the heroes because if you join the chess club, they have a chess teacher, and you can sign up to take 7 classes a week from this absolutely fantastic chess teacher. And these kids have won national championship after national championship over a period of 10 or 12 years. They just keep winning. And they have students who are like 12, 13 years old who are master level. And there's this one girl that we meet named Rochelle, my hero.
Yeah.
I'm just so impressed with Rochelle.
She's so great.
She goes through this school. It's like an intermediate school, and then goes on to high school. And she has the opportunity... She's within reach during the film of becoming the first African-American master chess player.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And female.
Female African.
Yeah, yeah.
African-American female chess player. Fantastic. When we leave her in the documentary, she has reached a 2000 level, which is pretty impressive. She has to get to 2200 level to be a master. And she... wins a national tournament in which she's awarded an all-expenses-paid full university scholarship.
Incredible.
And she's like, you know, my mother could never afford to send me to a school like this. It's really incredible.
So, and these kids are really amazing. You meet her and you meet a couple of other kids. There's five kids that they focus on. One of them seems to have a little bit of learning difficulties, but he really wants to be in the chess club and he's fascinated by chess and he wants to get involved. And then they've got a couple of other kids and these kids...
And the stronger kids mentor this weaker kid.
They do. And do they ever sleep? I mean, they must be up at the... so early practicing homework or doing homework.
Oh, they do their homework plus their chess homework plus Saturday morning tournaments.
And they seem to be very involved with their family or at
because we meet the families as well.
We meet their families and these kids are just going and going and going and they're really good in school as well.
And there's one kid, his name is Pobo. He runs for student council.
Oh, yeah.
And he's plotted out his life.
That's right.
First student council president, mm-hmm. then he'll be president of the university student council, and then congressman. That's he's right. got it all worked up until he's president.
And you know, I won't be surprised at all because, first of all, this was set in 2008. And what happened was there was the economic crash in the United States. And all hell broke loose and the funding for schools was cut way back. And they thought at first they were down $1 million. They re-looked at their books, but they were still down a couple of hundred.
And the kids all wrote letters. All the kids wrote letters to their congressmen and their senators and everything.
And
they fundraised.
They fundraised because the chess program was very dependent on that because they traveled to three different places in the United States during their school year to compete in tournaments.
Where the school will send like 50 kids to Dallas
from
Brooklyn. It's incredible,
And then somewhere in the Midwest and then somewhere in upstate New York. And that's a pretty substantial field trip to have parents and kids and teachers protect you, sleeping in dorms or hotels.
And this is something that the kids... they would never be able to afford on their own.
What did you say about the poverty statistics?
It's like 70%
are
below the poverty line.
So, you know, this is a really a big miracle story. And I can't understand why we don't look at this movie, look at the grid and the structure that they built.
Yeah, what are they doing right?
What are they doing right? And maybe we should run our cities like that and run our countries and all of our schools like that.
Fabulous documentary. If you come across it, watch it. I mean, first of all, a documentary about a bunch of kids playing chess. How exciting can it be? It's pretty darn exciting, as it turns out, because you get involved in these kids' lives and you learn about all their individual issues and what they're trying to overcome. Mm-hmm. And they're all at different levels, but they all bring the school up.
Right.
It's really just an impressive bunch of kids. And you see, like, this is America, an America that works.
An America works. Also, you see the young, beautiful female teacher who teaches chess. She's not the only one teaching chess. There's a couple of other teachers. And I think the principal's involved somehow, too. But the other guy's kind of like a jock. And he's like the square. The female teacher is like the liberal. And the other guy's a square, conservative jock type. And these two, they have a repartee. They do tease each other about their politics. But you know what? They talk to each other and they focus on what's bigger than themselves.
That's right.
That also is an incredible pattern.
Yeah, it's very impressive.
Oh, my God.
And very impressive bunch of students and teachers.
Yes.
The whole school.
Yes.
Just watching it happen, watching these kids excel. It's such a beautiful thing.
It really is. It'd be a great Christmas movie or a holiday movie or Hanukkah or whatever you're celebrating. And also, I think maybe it might be on YouTube. I might go and see if we can share that. I'll definitely put the trailer on YouTube. What else are we doing? We've got a bunch of stuff.
We have a bunch of stuff on the go,
We're in the middle of it that we're going to binge.
So we might call it unfinished business.
Unfinished business,
so we're going to tell you a little bit about the stuff that we're watching now. And maybe you can watch some of it too and tell us what you think.
Right.
Because you can write to us anytime at theagency.podcast@gmail.com.
Right.
Or if you have stuff to send us, we love getting stuff.
Yeah, you can write us and we're very grateful for you listening and sending us stuff. You can write to us, Anthony Stagg, the Emperor of Ephemera, at the agency. The agency, care of Anthony Stagg, the Emperor of Ephemera, Post Office Box 89101. 1859 South Ashland Avenue, Chicago, Illinois, 60608. There we go. And, one thing I'm watching, you haven't watched, I was going to try and push you to watch it, was The Ripper.
Tell me about it.
Well, it's about the Yorkshire Ripper, and it seems to be in 1978, for 5 years, from 1977 or 76 until 1981, there was a guy in Yorkshire. I don't know England. I don't know where Yorkshire is. It's a neighborhood. But he was shredding women. I mean, he was a little bit like Jack the Ripper. That's why he's called the Ripper. He did intense violence to basically sex workers. Okay?
Okay.
He was attacking and taking advantage of sex workers being vulnerable and getting in his car or going out to the woods with him or something. And people were starting to get pretty afraid. And this is a four-part documentary, which I have not finished. I'm about 2.5 episodes in. And it's very interesting, partly because you're thinking about Jack the Ripper, and then you're thinking about the horror of this in these years with young women walking around the streets. And it ties into the Ted Bundy documentary I watched a few months ago that I told you about. What was very interesting was that they only mostly interviewed women. Okay? In this, it's very women-based as well. There are definitely cops and police, but I don't think they're going to show us the Ripper. I think we're going to know who they are, but I don't think they're going to show them to us, because the impression I'm getting right now is they don't talk anything about this guy. And a couple of the people that they interviewed, just like on Ted Bundy, in Ted Bundy, they said Ted Bundy was able to be that serial killer, and many of these serial killers were able to get away with things because of women being liberated and free to move in the world. They weren't married. They were going to university. They had part-time jobs. They were up late. They were driving their own cars. Whereas in previous years, maybe there wasn't that kind of mobility.
Very interesting.
And I guess it's suggested that there might have even been antagonism because of it. Maybe these guys were pissed off that women had this mobility. I don't know. Sure. And they say the same thing, that they tried to do a curfew in the Yorkshire area and in the UK, and the women got pissed off. Why are you curfewing women? Curfew men. We should go out. You guys stay home. So it's brought up some very interesting battles that are going on with society. And are you worried about stirring something? Should I? Oh, they did stir something. I just realized we have food on, and I thought you were about to get up and stir the food in the oven.
I made no effort to get up and leave the podcast to stir stuff in the oven, because we have Emperor of Ephemera, Anthony Stagg, has been assigned.
All right, good.
Mixing up.
That's right.
We've got going.
I got drunk and I'm all panicking.
So,
my drunk.
So from just to interject, yep, from the comfort food diner, what we've got going is we have chicken thighs,
yep,
African sausages, red peppers, mm-hmm, onions, mm-hmm,
garlic,
all mixed together with spices and yummy salt and some olive oil, mm-hmm, roasting together, yeah, in the oven. Oh, also some hot chilies.
Oh yeah, it's starting to smell really, really good.
It is so smelling really nice.
So I think my little chocolate booze things and the good smells got me all
concerned. Candy is drunk.
So I do think The Ripper is really worth watching. I don't know if it's your cup of tea, but I know some of our listeners are going to love it. If Sarah's out there in Edmonton or Karen in Edmonton, you guys are going to really appreciate this.
Okay. What else are we watching? We started to watch Flight Attendant.
Oh, I love it.
Flight Attendant. I really like it. I like it too, although although it's kind of annoying.
Well, she's a little bit crazy.
It's about a flight attendant, yeah, who is let's say a party animal.
She is a party animal for sure.
So she has guys she's met, uh-huh, in various, uh-huh, different places, yeah, around the world, and she goes out and she has an alcohol problem.
She
drinks until she blacks out. Yeah. So she goes to Bangkok, mm-hmm, and she meets this guy on the flight, and they're flirting, and they end, mm-hmm, up kissing on, mm-hmm, the flight. Highly inappropriate.
And they, maybe more than kissing, but they only show us
that's
that.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so she says, oh, I'm not supposed to go out with people from the flight, but she does, right, anyway. And they go out, and you see they're having a great time.
They seem to really connect and,
yes,
have a beautiful...
Yes, and they're drinking,
and they
having
hang
a good time,
all
and
weekend.
They're drinking. And then they end up back at his hotel, and she, uh-huh, wakes up in the morning and looks over, and he's there with his throat slit, completely drenched in blood.
And completely dead.
And very dead.
Yeah, completely
highly
dead. Highly dead. So
and
then
And then the hilarity ensues.
It does. And you know what's funny? Because by the feel of it, I didn't know it was going to be a murder mystery or espionage.
It's a mystery, but there's a kind of a comic flair to it.
Oh, it's very... There's some really funny lines.
And she's like she's come right out of a
Lucy
show.
Well, she's great. Carrie... Kaylee... Kuolo, and I love her because she was on The Big Bang Theory, and I used to watch that all the time.
Okay, Cuoco?
And she played, yeah, Cuoco, thank you. She's really good. She's very physical comedy. You're right, she's like Lucille Ball or something. Sometimes it's maybe a little bit much for people.
She's like a magnet for trouble.
She is a magnet for trouble.
And she doesn't have quiet, sober moments. She's just non-stop.
No, I think that might be the part that's maybe annoying, but you know what? I'm kind of lifted my... I'm just going to accept it.
Well, yeah,
you
know? That's what you have to
and she is a very compelling actress,
and
in her personality.
It's well done. And
it is.
Fun.
I'm really
it's
looking forward to it.
It's beautifully shot.
It's beautifully shot. Then there's some great titles. The titles are amazing. The way it's shot and put together is really fun and very funny in parts. And I think I'm really curious how are they going to play this out, because she lands up talking. This happens right away in the first episode. She lands up talking to the dead guy. So it's,
oh yeah, she has an ongoing conversation with the dead guy.
It's actually a pretty entertaining thing. It's a little bit like American Werewolf in London, when the guy that the hero of that keeps talking to his friend that got killed by a werewolf. So I think it's very promising. We're into something else too. You turn me on to something.
First of all,
oh yeah, go ahead.
Speaking of beautifully shot,
yes.
we're watching Your Honor.
Oh,
which,
yeah,
which is just coming out. So we're watching it as we can stream
right.
it. So
I guess we're watching it on Crave.
Yes, on
and
Crave.
Three episodes, and it's maybe produced by HBO or Showtime.
And it's starring Bryan Cranston
yep.
as a judge.
Yep.
And his son has his wife was murdered the previous year. His son is driving the car, and he's in places where he shouldn't go. And I think he's in places where he shouldn't go because he's a photography student, and he likes to take pictures in like the lower ninth ward and places
right,
like that.
Right.
And he goes to these places, and then he has to hightail it out because all the gangster guys are there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. It seems to be a little bit stereotypical picture of those neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it's actually like there. It's in New Orleans.
Yep.
It's in New Orleans. And he...
we've got the guy from The Wire who goes, oh, shit.
That's she.
Yeah, great actor. And he's underplayed so far, but I think we're going to see a lot more of him in the future episodes.
And this kid...
The kid drives me crazy. I don't think he's a very good actor.
He gets in an accident and he kills this other kid on a motorcycle.
Right.
And the kid on the motorcycle happens to be son of the badass
right.
gangster in New Orleans.
Uh-huh. And the mother's pretty bad too.
And the mother's also very badass.
Yeah. Yep.
Son's in a lot of trouble, and he leaves the scene and goes mm-hmm. home and tells his dad what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And his dad, who's a judge, decides to help him cover it up.
Yeah, so it's very frustrating. It's very tense.
Yes, it's beautifully shot.
It is.
There's lots of good things about it.
Very many good things.
The story is not maybe one of them. The story is really hard to suspend your disbelief around the story.
And I feel like too much time is spent with the kid. I don't
because
think
the kid just isn't a great, well-developed character or actor.
I think maybe someone on the director or the cinematographer really likes them and they're giving them a lot of time. But I think the other characters are much more interesting. I think the kid's the MacGuffin. We should just leave him to the side, personally.
MacGuffin? I haven't heard that term before. Tell me about MacGuffin.
Hitchcock. Everything was a MacGuffin, remember? There was really no, even the Maltese Falcon is a MacGuffin.
Ah.
So in Hitchcock, he always had that little premise of something, but it really had nothing to do with what was happening. So
right.
It was just like a what's it called? A red herring?
Right.
So that was Hitchcock's red herring.
Okay.
So I feel like the kid.
By the way, I'm just unwrapping
what are you going
a Cointreau chocolate.
Oh, that's
going to
be nice orange chocolate.
Yeah.
That'll be really yummy. My vodka was an orange. Flavored.
The vodka was not too bad.
This tea was like the best cup of tea today, too. Boy,
it was
good.
Keep looking in your tea.
I'm
it must
tea,
be empty,
I wish
right?
It's empty, and I wish there was more.
Hey, would you want some of my
no,
tea?
No, you have sugar in yours, so please please enjoy your tea.
I will.
What else were we watching? Oh, you know what? We have not watched it yet, but we have been recommended by one of our listeners. They want us to watch Palm Springs. So
okay.
We have to put that on our list. I had hoped to watch just 10 minutes to kind of... introduce it. So I think we have to watch Palm Springs ASAP.
I'm in.
Okay, good.
I'm in.
And,
so I introduced Candy to a series
yes.
that it was a one season series that was canceled. It was 2016. It was canceled after one season because it was too good.
Right. You know what? I have a few of those. Pushing Up Daisies. There was a show with Aidan. I forgot his name now. Aidan Quinn. And he played Jesus in contemporary times. And I loved it. Canceled. Pushing Up the Daisies, canceled.
They canceled this
Firefly,
one.
Firefly, canceled.
This is a great series. It's called Quarry. Canceled. It's dark. It is dark. Dark, 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 dark. Oh, and it's also violent.
I love it.
It's beautifully acted. It's a great series. It's
so beautiful, and it's with one of my newest favorite actors in the last few years. We watched probably three episodes. And that's
Logan Marshall Green?
Green. And we probably watched three episodes before I realized it was the guy from Upgrade that we watched a couple of months ago that we were really into, the science fiction where he gets paralyzed in a tragic accident and a corporation puts him back together like the Bionic Man, and he's a fighting machine. This guy is such a good actor, such a performer, and he's brilliant in Quarry. I'm obsessed with him.
Also in it is a guy named Damon Harriman, and if that name isn't...
We love him.
If it isn't familiar to you, he was, among other things, the character of Dewey Crow in Justified.
Yes.
And he is a brilliant actor. He's wonderful.
He is a brilliant actor, and you know what's weird? Is I thought you and I had talked about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood on this show, but it had already come out about a month before we started this podcast. So I don't think we ever did talk about it on this podcast.
Oh, I think we have.
We have.
Okay. Although I don't know because the podcasts all meld together. I have no idea what we've talked about half the time.
Well, the whole point I'm mentioning this is that this actor who is a genius, he has played Marilyn Manson twice.
Right.
In Mindhunter and in Once
Upon...
Well,
not Marilyn Manson, actually Charles Manson.
Did I say
Manson?
Marilyn Manson? Yes, you did. Oh, I love Marilyn Manson.
That's because you've been into the chocolate booze.
I'm so fucked up from my chocolate booze here. I said I was going to get shit-faced tonight, didn't I? I saw Dr. K today, and Dr. K, I said, I'm going back to Eugene and Sheila's, and I'm getting drunk. And he goes, well, you're supposed to. This is the night on the East Coast where Dr. K is from, where the kids all drink before they have to be with their family for
Excellent.
The holidays.
Yeah, so I know what we're doing tonight.
Yeah, that's right.
so this is the story about...
Charles Manson. Sorry.
Charles Manson. Okay. It's 1972, yep. Memphis.
Yep. Yep.
The main character and his buddy come back from Vietnam, and they don't get a hero's welcome.
No, they don't.
Because there's something happened over there. There was a massacre, and they were accused of war crimes, but cleared.
Mm-hmm.
And they come home, and there's protests at the airport. They can't get jobs.
And they were called baby killers, basically, right? They were Marines, and they were called baby killers. So you right away know that these are very qualified men that are heroes to, on one degree in terms of service, but scorned because of some bad things that happened.
So this really, it's a neo-noir kind of series. Mm-hmm. Guy comes home, and this character shows up called the Broker. Mm-hmm. And what the Broker does is he takes on contracts to kill people, and then he gives the contracts to his various crew of killers.
Right. They're delegated out by Tom Noonan.
And he convinces this main character, Mac, who he calls Quarry.
That's right.
To be part of his gang of killers. The other guy who comes back home from Vietnam ends up getting killed,
right?
And this guy has to do jobs, and first of all, his buddy was given $30,000 as an advance and then got killed, and the Broker said, well, you're responsible for that $30,000, you have to work it off. So he has to kill people in order to pay off the debt.
That's right.
So he's killing people, he's not getting paid. And, he has a challenging relationship with his wife, who had been having an affair while he was off in Vietnam, and who doesn't think very highly of the fact that he's killing people.
No, she doesn't. And she was really pissed that he did two tours. He came home,
yes,
built a swimming pool, and went back out in Vietnam.
Yes, he couldn't.
She was pissed.
And no one can understand why he went back. But clearly, you see, he's having trouble living in the non-war world.
And I have come across that in Vietnam literature, fictional and non-fictional, that often guys sign up again.
So right, this one's dark. It's gritty.
It's beautiful.
There's some relief. And when they go in, anytime they go into a bar, there's always a live band.
Right.
And the live bands are
so
great.
It's so fun. It's really great.
And as well, the recorded music is great.
Yes.
So musically, there's a lot of treats in this.
True.
Series.
Oh, you know, that's another series that we really liked. Stag and I really watched it. Had the guy from My Name is Earl. I love that actor. I've forgotten his name right now, but it was called Memphis Blues. Only lasted a season, canceled. But they also tried to put a lot of music in it, but it was not as dark as this one. Was bad, but I love it. Plus, we've got that good actor. We've got the broker. We have all kinds of bayous. We've got motorhomes. We've got chases. We have bombs going off.
There's leeches. There's
leeches, political intrigue, racism. I mean, it's an incredible... I know where I was going with this. It's an incredible story. So then we go, who wrote this? Max Allen Collins wrote this. And he was he's still alive. He's still writing, as far as I know. And he's an avid mystery writer. And I phoned around Toronto and onto Amazon, and I could not track down books right away.
You can get them on Kindle, I think.
You can get them on Kindle. Yes, I did see that, but I don't have a Kindle. So I was looking, you know, maybe on Audible or something. You do have a Kindle.
Well, you have an iPhone, correct?
I have an iPhone.
So you get the free Kindle app for your iPhone.
I know.
You can order it for Kindle, and then you can read it on your phone.
Sure, but you've seen my screen on my phone.
Read it on your phone. Let me describe Candy's screen for you, and we will post a picture of her.
Yeah, you'll have to see. I don't know how we'll do that.
Imagine you dropped your iPhone from a 6-story building, and the screen has a million cracks through it.
I know.
And you've dealt with that problem by taking Scotch brand transparent tape and covering the screen
with it.
And she's happily using her phone, which you can barely see.
Because it happened right before I came here. If I'd had time to go and upgrade I'm ready for an upgrade, I would have done it. But we hit the highway and came up here in kind of a hurry.
We're glad you're here.
Thank you. I'm just kind of bearing with it. You got to take a picture of it like that. You can really see it when it's turned off. It's just terrible. So I can barely read text.
So maybe you won't be reading it on Kindle
right now. I won't be reading it on Kindle right now. But anyway, Mac, I'm really curious about this writer because this TV show, or at least this first season, it was so well conceived. It's got to be from a great writer to be so good. I don't know if anyone's made films from his other stuff, but he's an avid writer. He's written a lot, and I'm pretty compelled by it.
Certainly the series is fabulous. It really, really is fabulous. All the characters are really interesting.
Yeah. Yep.
Some of them you don't learn a lot about. Like, there's one character who appears now and then, and she's a female contract killer.
Mm-hmm.
And she just appears like she's backup, making sure that the deal is done.
They had enough material for more episodes, that's for sure.
Oh,
more seasons. And it's so weird. So many shows go on, and you don't care. But this one I would have really cared about. One of the guys, the guy who's called the broker, he's in Westworld, and he's in something else we watched recently. Maybe Stegan, it's a show we watch. Another kind of Western. Anyway, he's a really good actor, too. I've got to get his name. I forgot it. But the broker is incredible. You could have a whole show with the broker. You could have a whole show with Buddy, the actor who played
Charles Manson. Oh, Buddy's great. And there's these scenes with Buddy and his mom.
Yeah, he
lives with his mom.
It's priceless.
And his mom treats him like her little boy.
Oh, and she's a great actor,
and she
too.
Cooks all kinds of great food. Yep. And she does surgery on him and takes out the bullets when he's shot.
That's right.
And he's saying, I don't know if I can do this kind of work anymore.
Right.
And she's like, yeah, I understand. Sometimes you need a change.
Yeah. She's really wonderful. And she's really excited for his relationship. She thought he was going to get engaged or something. So she's pretty supportive of the fact that he is gay. And that's a really nice touch, too. There's so many beautiful things about Corey.
Plus, it's in Memphis, and it's beautifully shot in Memphis.
Even if it's only 8 episodes, it's worth it.
Yes.
What else are we in the middle of? Something else.
Is there something else? What else are we in the middle of?
Oh, Selling Sunset.
You might be in the middle of that.
I'm in the middle of that.
You can tell our listeners about Selling Sunset.
Selling Sunset is basically
I'm going to just say that your husband is just way too interested in this show.
I think
it's because of all the babes in the show.
There's a lot of babes in it. And it's set in Los Angeles. It's a reality TV show. Basically, these two brothers who seem to be twins have hired something like 8 incredibly gorgeous, talented women to sell houses, and
not just to sell houses, to sell the most expensive houses in the city.
There was one that they all looked at. It was $40 million. It was on the top of Laurel Canyon or something. I mean, it was insane. And all of the houses in it, the one thing I've noticed is that they're not classic Hollywood houses, which is, if I was going to live in Hollywood, I would want to live in one of those, like where Mary Pickford lived or something. I mean, I know they're probably insanely wealthy, but in my fantasy world, those would be what. But they're selling the really super modern ones. Super contemporary. What else are we watching?
I think that's that covers it. That's what we're watching.
All right.
And we're trying to get as much of that watched as we can while we're here in the same building.
And there may be more go lessons. We did one go lesson.
Oh, yes. Candy took a go lesson. And tell the listeners, what did you think of the game, getting an introduction to the game?
I was really fascinated by it. I was very intimidated by it because there's a lot of empty space. And so I was concerned with how I'm going to know whether I'm getting anything accomplished. That's what I was thinking. Like, how am I going to know I'm building up territory? Because basically, it does seem like you're building territory.
Because you can only play one stone at a time.
I know. And to imagine. And there's
361 points on the board.
Well, there you go. So it was a little bit daunting, but I thought that the metaphors were very helpful. There is the names of moves and positions do look like what they are. So I thought that was really easy, and not easy, but compelling. So I'm hoping we can get another lesson in.
And I'm learning as well that there are different terms in Go. Like, I've learned the Japanese terms, but I'm taking Go lessons from a Chinese player, and I had one last night. Mm-hmm. And what the Japanese refer to as a knight's move, which refers to chess, because it's like 2 points up and 1 point on a diagonal.
Oh, wow.
So they call it a knight's move, a small knight's move, or a large knight's move, or a super large knight's move. In the Chinese version, the translation is you fly. So you fly, or a big flight. So you don't take the knight's move, you take a fly. So it's interesting how the language is different. And I think some of the Korean language as well, different, although the general language of Go is Japanese.
Right. I also was impressed with the sensation of aggression. I mean, obviously, when you play Risk or Monopoly or Scrabble, there are aggressive ways you can play, or assertive ways you can hold back on things. But this seemed to be right away very obvious what you were doing.
Well, you have to. Your stones have to be alive.
Yeah.
And it's life or death. You have to be able to make the life shapes, or else your stones are going to die and you'll lose.
And I had an overwhelming feeling of it, kind of almost exhilarating, really. It wasn't a bad feeling. It was kind of exhilarating to see that something so minimalistic could be so assertive. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I very much think of my stones as my guys, too. You know, and
that's a good idea,
because your stones have to be alive or dead. Yeah. So you give them those kinds of attributes, even though, unlike chess, which is very aristocratic or has a
kind of intellectual.
It has a kind of order from the top, from the king and the queen.
Oh, hierarchies.
A hierarchy, right?
Yes, these guys are all proletariats.
In Go, all the stones are equal. It's only how the stones relate to one another that give them power.
Yeah.
Right? So a stone on its own, they're all of the same value. Mm-hmm. They're just a stone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And every stone can only cover one point. Simple rules.
Right.
So I'm quite interested to see if you're going to follow up.
I am too. I'm ready for another lesson. I'm anxious for another lesson. And I think it's just, let's get that going and see if it takes. We're going to find out if it takes.
I think the next lesson will be, we're going to watch a video together.
Oh, okay.
A basics video.
Good idea.
And I can give you some commentary that.
I like it.
And that might be a really good approach.
I must say, Eugene was a very good teacher. I could tell right away that the way he was approaching it was very good and very helpful. I didn't feel
And that's not the alcohol talking.
No, that's not the alcohol talking. I've got a couple more here.
So, I guess this is our kind of Christmas, solstice, festivus, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa show for the year.
Yeah.
So, whatever it is you're celebrating, we'd like to wish you all the best. It's a difficult one because I know it's a time in which we like to gather with our families, and it's very difficult to do that with the pandemic and with the restrictions that are in place here in Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we wouldn't be able to even see Candy if she hadn't gone through quarantine and if she wasn't living with us here for the time being.
Nope, can't really do much. And if you're really, really lonely, reach out on Facebook, give me your phone number, I'll call you, or we can just chat on Instagram or Facebook. I don't want anyone feeling lonely, and these are tough times. We're worried about the vaccine. We're hoping it's going to get spread around real fast.
Yeah.
And I want to remain positive. I was not so positive about the vaccine in the past, but I'm starting to feel a little bit more excited about it.
Well, in that now it's real.
It's real.
Now people are actually getting jabbed.
That's right.
And, jabbed. And hopefully it will be really effective, and it can start to... it could start to reduce the caseload, and our hospitals can have a little bit more room.
Eugene, this made me think. I was thinking this. I was trying to talk to Steg about it. I think we were doing it in the car, talking about this in the car yesterday. Was you think about all the people? You know, we're worried about overloading the healthcare system, right? Well, one of the reasons we don't want to overload the healthcare system is who's jabbing these needles. I think it must be the military. I'm assuming because all the people that would normally. Well, right. But if they're busy trying to save people from COVID and take care of them, how are they going to be giving out vaccines? So that's all the more reason to keep those hospitals cleared up and any kind of medical centers cleared up, because it would be nice for someone who is a very experienced nurse practitioner to give you that needle, because it's probably going to hurt like hell. Have we heard?
I don't know. I've seen the first vaccines. Doesn't look like people are yelping in pain.
Oh, good, because I thought it was cold, so I thought that would really hurt.
I think they thaw the vaccine candy
a little bit.
They thaw it completely.
They thaw it completely.
And then it has 6 hours.
6 hours of room temperature.
Yes, that you can jab, and then it's done.
I was thinking a big cold.
Well, I'm sure if it was 80 below zero, it would be cold. But I think that would be a little bit cold to be doing the jabbing.
Well, I thought they might warm it a bit, but I thought it would be just freshly thawed. So I just hope we get that vaccine spreading around really quickly.
Me too. And and we could have a little bit more relaxed new year.
Oh, God,
which we're not constantly worrying about catching this virus.
And people can go back to their work and make money and support their families. It's too long without being able to make money. It's just a crime.
And well, we're happy to have those of you who are hanging out at home listening to the agency. Yes. We know that you have jobs and professions and vocations and whatever it is you do, you want to get back to doing.
Yep.
And so hopefully we'll be able to all do that pretty soon.
Yep.
And as we say, whatever you're celebrating, we're going to wish you all the best. And we're going to be back at you. We're going to try to get one more episode done before the new year next week. Mm-hmm. And
maybe about Palm Springs.
Maybe if we can if we can see it.
Yeah. All right. Happy holidays, everybody. Thank you for listening.
See ya.